When you need to refuel between meetings or running errands, or you just want a healthy snack that squashes your hunger, Wonderful Pistachios, which come in a variety of flavors and sizes, by the way, are the perfect choice to fill you up and keep you going throughout the day. Wonderful Pistachios is also a good source of protein and a zero-guilt snack. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, guys, which gives you over 10% of your daily value. And with flavors like salt and pepper, sweet chili, and seasoned salt in the shelled variety, options like chili roasted, sea salt, and vinegar or jalapeno lime in the no-shell variety, you're sure to please your taste buds while snacking healthy. So check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
I wouldn't trade being a mom for the world, but it's also a full-time job. And that means sometimes I get less sleep than I'd like. So I make the most of the hours of sleep I do get with Cozy Earth's luxurious bedding products. Cozy Earth bedding products are crafted with temperature-regulating technology that adapts to your body's needs through all phases of motherhood. And they use only the very best fabrics, materials, and weaves, offering superior softness that invites you to sink into a world of comfort. I have the king sheets for my bed, the entire set, and I swear to you, it's like you can't wait to get in and you never want to get out. If you're a commitment phobe, that's totally fine because Cozy Earth stands by the quality and longevity of their products, so much so that you can enjoy a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty on all purchases. And just for our listeners, Cozy Earth has an exclusive Mother's Day offer. Use the code Jillian for 35% off at CozyEarth.com. That's CozyEarth.com. Cozy Earth, built to last through the hardest days and the longest nights of motherhood.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, actually. I've gained a little perspective, Janice. I feel a little bit wiser today.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Oh, good.
I want to tell you, okay, so I read this study, and it was in the Journal of Applied Psychology, right?
Oh, my God. You're getting deeper and deeper all the time.
This is serious. And it was about people who were ambitious but never satisfied.
Oh.
And I thought, dear God, that kind of is me, right? So check it out. I wrote down the stats here. So these researchers tracked 717 people, random number to track, but that's the number,
right,
over a 70-year period.
Oh, well, I love the long studies.
I don't know how they did that, but they did. And when they compared people who classified as ambitious, as in graduated from a prestigious school, went on to a high-paying job, against a more laid-back individual, they found that the ambitious people actually came out of their lives less satisfied. And it seems to be that ambitious people are always jumping from one thing to the next. It's always like, now what? Now what? What's the next thing? Now what? And this is going to sound really gross, but it's true. So, you know what? Screw it. I'm so flawed. If you don't hate me already, you know. So a friend of mine texts me, right? And I'm on this billboard, this GoDaddy billboard in Times Square. And it's enormous. And he's... This is a guy I used to work with at a little talent agency when I was an assistant years ago. And he's going through Times Square and he texts me and he goes, holy crap. He's like, buddy, you are on a huge billboard in Times Square. What's that like? And I got the text and I was like, ugh, whatever. And my friend's like, you're not going to respond? And I was like, no, what do you want me to say? What am I supposed to say? And like, that it's really cool, that it's super neat, that it's awesome. And I was like, well, I didn't even stop to care. And my business partner showed it to me. He's like, Jill, look how cool this is. I was like, yep, it's great. Whatever. Moving on. And I realized that for me, I'm always like, great, that's done. Now let's think about all the things that still aren't done. And there's always going to be the thing that isn't done, the thing you haven't achieved yet, the thing you haven't accomplished yet. And I did a lot of thinking about, wow, what is the point then? If it's constantly jumping from one thing to the next thing to the next thing without ever feeling satiated, satisfied. And I do believe that it comes from that like a deep-seated insecurity where you're always trying to prove yourself. You know, these ambitious, quote, ambitious driven people. It's great to be ambitious and it's great to be driven. But I do believe that there's always that little part of you that wasn't good enough. And so you want it to be better. you
Is
want.
That it? Is that
oh,
it?
God, Janice, yes. You want it to be more. You want to achieve more. And it is getting a little bit better as I've gotten older. But I want to, you know, like now I think I don't, when I do projects, I don't do them so they'll be successful. I write a book because I want to write the book, not because I hope it sells copies. I don't write it to be commercial. If I did, you know, I would write the secret diet, you know, instead of like unlimited self-help book. But with that said, still, I do what I do because I'm passionate about it. But when it comes to achievements, it's always what's next, what's coming, what I need to do. And I thought for those of you out there who are like me, we might go over a few tips that I've read about and jotted down that I've personally put into effect that have worked for me. You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Just a few key ones. Savor the moment. Celebrate every accomplishment, big and small. Celebrate it. Like, go to a dinner with friends. Have a glass of champagne. Take a moment and break your arm, slapping yourself on the back. When's the last time you actually stopped and did that? When were you like, you know, I have a wine cellar full of amazing wine, and every single bottle of wine in there, I was like, when I get this achieved, I'm opening it. Not one of those damn bottles is opened. I've never stopped to open one of the bottles.
But that's because you force yourself to be humble.
No,
you,
I'm
Jillian,
not.
Force yourself to
I'm
be.
I'm not being humble. I'm not being humble. I think I'm just like, I don't want to get lazy. I want to make sure that I'm, you know, striving. I always tell women,
so you don't
not
reward.
To. No, which is the worst thing you could do. I would kill people for doing this. So, you know, the other day when I recently got this opportunity to start doing some celebrity segments on Insider, I'm getting to the CBS show, right? So I'm getting
very
to
cool, by the way.
I'm getting it. Like, it's not about fitness. Oh my God, it's taken me forever to show people that it's like, it's about living better. And I'm interviewing celebrities from Danica Patrick to friggin', you know, Bob Harper to Maria Menounos to Jessica Alba on how to live better and how to be better in your lives. And it has taken me so long to show people I could do that and to get the opportunity to do that. And when we got it, I was like, great. Okay, who do we have? Oh, okay, who's next? And then I stopped and I was like, no, you know what we're going to do? We're going to open a bottle of this wine today. Stop and savor the moment. Really take it in. Then the next one is, it's really about changing your outlook. And I started doing this exercise, and it's like, it's to change your brain process. So every single day for a month, write down three things a day that you're thankful for and you're proud of.
Oh, that, you know what? Gratitude lists.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they can be the, and I totally get, and it can be the simplest thing. I am grateful today that my car started so I could get to work. Like, it doesn't have to be. Those are, I totally get that.
I mean,
powerful.
Exactly. Like, it just allows you to not think about the lack in your life, but more the abundance in your life.
Yeah.
And it's really been helping me. Like, I stop and go, okay, these three things I'm stoked about. And by the way, sometimes I go on. I'm like, I'm extra stoked about 4, 5, and 6 too on my list. And it's been helping me with my outlook and my perspective. So, and it also trains you to look for positive things first instead of the negative.
Yeah, for sure. Because
it's so easy to see the negative, boy. And now this one's kind of snotty, but it's not meant to be snotty. And it's give yourself a reality check. And what I've been doing is, okay, so here I am, right, being bitchy and ungrateful about, I want to achieve this, I want to achieve that, I want to achieve this. And a friend of mine, who's, oh, by the way, a great trainer, she came up to me, she's in her 40s, and she's like, you know, she did a workout video with me, and she was just lovely and gracious, and she's like, I love working with you because it really makes me step up my game, and it makes me think about all the things I want to achieve, and, you know, what you've achieved in the business has been so inspiring. And I was like, and I compared myself to my colleagues and thought, geez, I've achieved all this. I've been so lucky to have the opportunities that I've had to get the platform that I've had to be able to get my message out and elevate my career in the way that I have. And I always say, don't compare yourself because it sets you up to fail. So in this case, don't look at people who've achieved more and beat yourself up, but maybe look at how in cases where you've achieved more. And be grateful and be proud and go, you know, I have achieved all of these things. you know, I am doing really well in my area of expertise. And maybe compare yourself and be grateful for the things that you have. Not to say that you're better than anyone else. That's not the point of it. But it's to say that, like, oh, I did a good job here. Or, oh, I've been lucky here. Or, oh, I am grateful for this.
Because you're the only you.
Yeah.
Only you.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Only you.
Only you.
Well, okay, we can be done with that one.
All right. No, that was right. You know what? For that one, I'm going to give you...
Stars. I like stars.
Yes. I'm going to give you 3 stars.
Woo!
Because I felt that you got vulnerable there.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm very, very pleased.
Thank you. Luna. Okay, I saw this crazy video circulating. I think it was even on Today's Show, and it was a woman tossing around a 2-week-old newborn, calling it baby yoga. And I literally mean one leg, whipping the kid around in circles.
No.
I swear, Janice, I swear to you. I'm going to show it to you when we do our video cast in a couple of weeks. It is insane. And it got me thinking, you know, we always think of yoga as like very... and I love it. Yoga is my workout of choice these days. It zens me out. But I really want to discuss all the different practices of yoga and how to find the form of yoga that's right for you. And then, you know, when you see something like that,
yeah,
you know, the flag should go up. Like it should with any different form of exercise. And it's like, you know, and the woman, by the way, waited till the kid was 2 to release the video. And she's like, well, he's perfectly healthy. And it's like, maybe. How do we know he didn't dislocate his friggin', you know, common sense, common sense. And then I thought there's so many different kinds of yoga. Let's disseminate them for our listeners.
Okay.
Number one, let's talk about the benefits of yoga, okay? Some of the great things about yoga is one of the most medicinal forms of exercise you can practice. Theoretically, you know, it calms your mind, it massages your internal organs, it helps to detox the body because the positions you're putting yourself in, you know, it's like, oh, this one's good for your liver, this one's good for your kidney. There are poses that fight depression by helping create more blood flow to your brain. I mean, I am not a certified yoga teacher, by the way. I work with certified yoga instructors who I think are fabulous and who teach me. And even when I created Yoga Meltdown, I worked with a certified yoga instructor and we put the workout together. And I love it, of course. But there are a lot of different kinds of yoga out there. And some of them are extremely dangerous, not just for the baby, but for us as well. So like there's this mommy yoga stuff. Now, and we think to ourselves that like, it's so funny because this stuff can make us doubt ourselves. You know, it's
How
like,
do you mean?
Well... Okay, so you see this woman doing it, and you go, well, she's a yoga guru, right?
Oh.
She's got to know better than me.
Right.
Maybe I'm not getting my kids' blood flowing enough. And they say, oh, it's good for the kids' digestion. There comes a time where I'm going to say to you, with anything fitness, question it. If it looks ridiculous, it's ridiculous. If it looks dangerous and absurd, it's dangerous and absurd. And go to a trusted source. Because, yeah, there might be times where you think to yourself, maybe I can push harder than this. Maybe I am living in a comfort zone that I can push beyond, because a lot of times people are. But if this is somebody that you don't trust, that you don't know, that you haven't seen be successful before, don't do it. If it seems insane, don't do it. And so, you know, with yoga, I'm going to go over a few of the different kinds here. Here's one that I hate more than anything on the planet, and it's called Bikram yoga.
Oh, the hot one.
Oh, it's hot yoga. And so you've got 26 poses, right? And you get into a... You have a series of yoga poses that you do, and you don't break the poses, and you move through the routine. It's a little routine, and the room is like 115 degrees.
Yeah, I've never taken it, but I've heard it's just horrendous in there.
I did it once, right? Because I thought, okay, you know, I've been bashing it forever. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to do this. And the reason I was bashing it is because people think that if you're sweating, you're getting a good workout. No, what you're doing is you're dehydrating your body. You're not necessarily getting a good workout. You want to generate heat internally, not externally. You want to warm up the body with the intensity of your workout, not external heat source. That can cause heat stroke and dehydration. You actually get a better workout and a climate that is controlled because it allows you to work out at a higher intensity. When the room is 115 degrees, I mean, I could barely stand, let alone work out. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to pass out. This is the worst thing ever. I was lightheaded. I had zero intensity in my practice. I almost passed out. I hated it. And you know what else I hated? I hate that you do the same. It's like in this Bikram practice, you do the same poses every time.
Oh, I
didn't
know that.
Well, your body's going to adapt to that.
Yeah.
When you work out, you need to try new poses. You need to experiment with, you know, more advanced variations or just different variations of movements. So for me personally, I say no to Bikram. I know there are those of you out there who love it. But remember that just because you're sweating doesn't mean you're detoxing. It just means that you're dehydrating. And you think, oh my God, I'm so flexible. But in truth, you can actually become what's called hypermobile. You can heat the body up externally and get into poses that you shouldn't be in. And you're more prone to injury. Now, here's one that I think is actually, you might have heard of something called Anusara yoga.
Anusara.
And it's like, it's kind of, it's very philosophical. And it's about opening up the heart chakra.
And well, I've done some chakra work.
Some chakra work. Yeah. And it's about opening up the heart chakra. And it's for people of all different levels in yoga. You know, there's restorative yoga, levels one, level two yoga. And it's sort of like, it's under the premise that there's intrinsic goodness in all people. So it's like, you know, it might not be the most intense workout you're going to get, but it's like, it's a nice little healing practice if you're into
vision. And you have to visualize a lot.
Exactly. Yeah. Anusara, that's what Anusara is about. Now you've heard of something called vinyasa. And vinyasa yoga usually is when people get into vinyasa flow. They get into a series called the salutations. Or
that's
salutation
what I do. It's flow.
A. Flow. Well, excuse me. There's different kinds of flow. There's also Ashtanga power, which is also flow.
Yeah. See, I've never done a power yoga, but I have done the flow.
Well, okay. Vinyasa. So, but don't be confused. It can be called power flow. So even though you're holding the poses, you're still moving from one pose into another.
Okay.
So, but in vinyasa, It's your more typical type of yoga flow where you're doing like these sun salutations. So it's a series of moves, what you're flowing through. And you may have done the sun salutations, mountain pose, and
you come down,
you come halfway up.
Downward dog.
Step back into plank, or you drop into
downward
pigeon.
Dog.
Downward dog. Your favorite.
And
for
I've
those
been
of you
trying
who
to
are familiar with the podcast, you may remember Hannah's being an extraordinary fan of Down Dog.
But there's a group that you know. Your body gets to know those positions.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. So you've got your sun. Now, for those of you who are more advanced athletes, you're going to like power. You're going to like Ashtanga. And this is when, this is like a level three kind of workout where you're holding the poses for a longer period of time. And you'll sit in warrior for, you know, 30 seconds. And I've seen teachers make people hold poses. Like, I once had to hold side plank for a minute. And I finally, like, my ego was like, uh-uh. And I had to go down in a child's pose. Because it was after, like, a series of flows of sun salutations. And I couldn't do it. But so for the more advanced athlete, you might want to check out Ashtanga, which is more power yoga. And then Iyengar. I know I'm not pronouncing it. I had to make my little notes on this. So Iyengar yoga is developed by a guy named B.S. Iyengar. He's a yogi teacher. And Iyengar is all about alignment, proper body positioning, alignment. And in this type of yoga, you're more likely to use props like blocks.
Straps,
exactly. And I got to be honest, I would say that probably the most balanced form of yoga is going to be Iyengar.
You mean like most well-rounded?
What I like about it is that you flow, but you do all different types of poses, so it's got the variety, you're not in extreme heat, it's not overly regimented, and it's focused more on form, because you got to also remember with yoga was not originally intended to be a form of exercise. It was a meditative practice where yogis would get themselves in the most uncomfortable position possible and then... No,
but they would look at animals. They would copy animals.
And you know, but a lot of times, I mean, if you look at some of those poses, they're not great for your knees. They're not great for your wrists. So, getting into proper alignment with yoga
for sure
is really important. Or you're gonna get injured, having proper form. And there's a lot to know about yoga, which is why, you know, it's so funny. It's like everybody who falls into a cult of fitness, whether they're CrossFit people or they're kettlebell people or they're yoga people. Kettlebell, it's a round dumbbell. Sorry, guys. But it, I mean, I get it. Ultimately, it was a weight system.
The
Russians, and they put like the kettlebells, and it would like they used it in markets and this, that,
maybe
and the
that's
other.
What that but, Russian you know, guru thought that her baby was.
But like, I get it. I don't want to. I know I'm going to piss off all the kettlebell people out there. I get it. Yes, you need to. You know, I got my kettlebell concept certification, and guess what? It took me one day to get it. Yoga, it takes weeks to get it. Weeks. They study for weeks.
Oh, yeah. They don't,
yeah, you go through weeks of certification.
You don't get it from Barney's yoga school.
Yeah, no. So no. With your yoga, I'm going to say make sure that you've been with a teacher who's been teaching for a really long period of time. And now you know, beginners, Anusara, advanced, Ashtanga, intermediate to beginners, Iyengar, stay away from Bikram and use your common sense, man. That baby yoga stuff. Skip a row.
Yeah, and a good yoga teacher will say, you know, she'll say for level one, like if you're in a kind of a rounded class and you can see there's different levels in the room, they will say for level one, do here if you want to push yourself a little bit more.
Yeah, modify for you.
Yeah, and they'll modify it.
There you go.
Have you ever cried in yoga?
No, I don't cry in yoga.
Then you haven't had a good release.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Haven't you ever had a little sniffle?
Oh, God.
When you're releasing your hips? You've never cried in yoga.
I don't cry in yoga. It's like crying in baseball. You don't cry in baseball or yoga. You've got issues. I think you're the one crying in yoga. I think you're the one with issues. Moving swiftly onward. Good grief, lady. So right now I'm sitting here with Dr. Agus, and he is the best-selling author of The End of Illness and one of the leading cancer researchers and oncologists in our country today. And we're going to help clear up some of this confusion regarding multivitamins. I know there's a lot of controversy out there right now. Are they bad for you? Are they good for you? So, Dr. Agus, thank you so much for coming.
Oh, it's my honor. Happy to be here.
Well, welcome.
Thank you.
Hit me with your vitamins,
David. So vitamins are chemicals. Right?
Okay.
Naturally
occurring, though. Our body is meant to process vitamin C, vitamin D.
It's not naturally occurring. They're synthesized. The whole premise of a vitamin
is
something that the body can't synthesize.
Oh, okay.
Right. So it's something – that's what a vitamin is. It's something the body needs but can't synthesize. That's its definition.
I'm so confused. You mean vitamin A, vitamin D?
Any vitamin. So what a vitamin is something the body can't synthesize.
Create on its own, you mean?
Create on its own.
Understood. Sorry.
So, for example, a mouse has the gene where it can make vitamin C. So vitamin C isn't a vitamin to a mouse because it can make its own, whereas
right.
we can't.
Okay, got it.
So if you look at the data, for example, if a man takes vitamin E for 3 years, and this was a $240 million study by our government, it showed a 17% increase in the rate of prostate cancer, and it lasted for 3 or 4 years after stopping the vitamin E.
What about all the studies that suggest high doses of vitamin C helps to fight cancer?
There has never been one. There have been four done.
Dr. Agate, I could Google it right now and
come
up.
It depends where it comes from. So the New England Journal of Medicine published two studies randomizing to vitamin C in cancer versus placebo, and no effect at all on cancer. So,
Doctor.
I mean, I cloned the vitamin C transporter in the 90s, and so certainly we were involved in this.
Like, look, I'm going to pull up, check, if
pull
I
one
pull
up.
This up, okay.
And so remember, there are journals where you pay a fee and they do it, and they're, you know, if you look at the good, reputable journals that are peer-reviewed.
So vitamin C, fighting, it automatically comes up on Google, search fighting cancer. And then it goes, studies show vitamin C's cancer-fighting properties, Reuters. Vitamin C may fight cancer in high doses, nutrient ingredients. Like, all of these things
about... Right, so this is in tissue culture. I mean, you change the pH, you're going to change the growth. But if you look at the data, there's never been a randomized
study...
How
vitamin C stops cancer. Science Daily. Natural News. I mean, it's all, like, all stuff. Cancer Center. Well, that's actually an ad. Excuse me. Fox News. Vitamin C may fight cancer.
Right, but
Reuters.
In the randomized study... They didn't work. So a lot of times people take things – that's the whole notion of a complex system. In a reductionist way, when you give a vitamin C to one cell or one gene, it can affect it in a good sense. But when you change the whole system, it hasn't been shown to work. In fact, if you take high-dose vitamin C, you can actually increase the amount of DNA damage in the body. And that was done by the NIH.
Because it's so acidic?
Because it's a because it damages DNA at high doses.
Okay.
And the problem with the vitamins is that they're not, for example, stable in solution. So, you know, when you say intravenous vitamin C, there is no form of vitamin C that's stable in solution that I know of.
Okay.
So it's impossible to actually give it intravenously. So you take large amounts of oral vitamin C, and there has been no benefit in patients with cancer. These are two very large randomized studies in the New England Journal of Medicine. Believe me, I wish there were. I wish these things worked. You know, if you give women with over 70 high-dose vitamin D, you increase the rate of bone fractures by 26%. Not decrease it, increase it.
Okay,
women who take omega-3 supplementation have a 15% higher incidence of cancer. You go through these.
How is that? I just read a study today that was talking about omega-3s.
In food, it's awesome. But think about it this way.
Fish oil supplements and how.
So 1 4-ounce serving of salmon is equivalent to about 14 fish oil capsules.
Okay.
So you really think we know how to get the oil out of a fish that's good for you? If you're a fisherman, you have a beautiful fish, you sell it to the seafood store for $20 a pound. You get an ugly looking degraded fish, you give it to the fish oil company. Eat the real food.
Okay, I hear you. And that I agree with you on that. But the reality is that people don't have the money to eat the real food these days.
Well, first of all, vitamins cost more than food. But so
a quality vitamin does cost at least $30
again,
a month.
We need to eat real food. And we need to go back to eating real food.
So you're saying, all right. So you're, and I agree, I can't argue with that. You should be getting your nutrients from your food, but the reality is most people aren't. They're just not.
Well, but we aren't having scurvy in our country, which is lack of vitamin
not
C.
Scurvy.
We're not having rickets, which is lack of vitamin D. So what are you implying?
I'm implying this, that vitamin deficiencies can be linked to everything from insomnia to sexual dysfunction to brittle hair to eczema to digestion problems.
Well, but again, and these are associations, not causalities. That's what the mix-up comes
explain
about.
That to me.
So clearly,
speak to me
for example,
in trainer terms, not
people
what
with
do you mean?
People with low vitamin D have higher incidences slightly of cancer and heart disease. That doesn't mean low vitamin D caused those. People who smoke have lower vitamin D. People who are obese have lower vitamin D. So then the studies were done to give vitamin D to these people, and it didn't affect these diseases. And so, you know, again, lower vitamin D may be a symptom of many other things going on, but it doesn't mean that it's causal. The body's very complex. When you measure one thing, you know there's vitamin D, there's its receptor, and there's six signaling molecules. When you give a large dose in a pill, you downregulate the receptor and screw up all the signaling. So it's a complex system. You can't just take one thing and it's better. The body, for example, needs 10, 15 units of vitamin E, yet a pill has 400 units. Who said more is better?
What if it isn't necessarily that you're taking high doses? Because that is anything in high doses. Isn't vitamin
right.
A extremely toxic in high doses to the liver?
It's how we treat leukemias through derivatives of vitamin A, yes.
So then in that particular case, but a multivitamin.
But a multivitamin, again, has order of magnitudes more than is required in most cases. If you look at women who take multivitamins, and this was a 29,000 women study.
Okay.
So big study. And they looked at women who took multivitamins versus not. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't randomized. So the women who took the multivitamins were actually healthier, lower BMI. They had less diabetes going in, and they exercised more. 15% higher death rate than the women who didn't.
Okay, here's my argument.
This is Journal of American Medical Association. So
okay.
A big study.
That is a big study, but right. Two things about that. Number one, the doses were extremely high.
This was a multivitamin day.
I was told that it was very high doses of vitamins that they were given. And then my other argument is, when I look at, let's say, an over-the-counter product, generally there are things in it like propylene glycol, which, you know, they use to de-ice planes, artificial coloring.
You're right. These are all good arguments. But then the counter has to be
because they're not looking at
I want someone to show me with a quality vitamin there's a benefit. And then, believe me, I'd be the first to be out there and pat them on the back and support it. The answer back is, well, it's too expensive to do the studies. We can't do it. Do the studies. Again, we just did a $240 million study with vitamin E and prostate cancer. And it didn't work. So the answer back was, well, they used the wrong preparation. Well, then you got to be lobbying for the right preparation. You know, there's always a counter argument. You can't prove a negative.
So are you saying that vitamins kill people, or are you just saying you think they're a waste of money and they should eat
better? Again, I say look at these randomized data. There have been 53 studies done in the history of mankind with more than 1,000 people randomized on vitamins. Not one of them ever showed a benefit in cancer and heart disease. And this is put together by the government.
Okay.
Ever. At the same point, the government's not bad. It's a good thing. Don't give me that look.
Come on, man. The FDA approves everything from like saccharin and all that garbage. The government.
The FDA is a good thing.
With the drug companies lobbying the government.
Well, again, without drug companies.
I have to play devil's advocate
here.
Well,
there's no conspiracy here. Without drug companies, we'd have no treatments for disease. I think we need them.
What about selling sickness? When you read books where drug companies create lifestyle diseases, it's like they
I don't think there's a conspiracy. I don't think they're creating lifestyle diseases. I think, you know, yes. Is that
I have to – you realize I have to play devil's advocate.
But realize that I'm there treating cancer patients every day. Without drug companies, I have nothing to give them. They just be dropping like flies.
Right.
I need hope. To me, they're hope. And believe me, I wish they were better. I wish there was more innovation. The capital markets have been closed to new biotech companies over the last decade, so there's not a lot of innovation. There needs to be. And believe me, I need better drugs to treat these diseases. I need someone to fork out the $1 billion to get a drug approved so I have something to fight a disease.
All right. I have an interesting question for you, and this is
personal. The answer is no.
No. It's actually not a question. It's actually
yes.
A very good friend of mine. Her father got colon cancer in the 80s, right? And they weren't, I gather, they did not do chemo on him. They operated, but the man had dropped down to 80 pounds, and they basically said, you're going to die. He was watching some morning show. I wrote down the names of these authors. You probably have not heard of them. It was Dirk Pearson and Sandy Shaw. And she was a chemist, and he went to MIT, and they advocated vitamin therapies. So he thought, what the hell? I'm dying anyway. What am I going to do? And he started literally taking high doses of vitamins, and he's 82 years old today. That's just random. That's a fluke.
Well, no, I don't know his particular case.
Right.
I don't know what's going on. But again, I'm just going back to randomized studies
Okay. Where
there hasn't been shown to be a benefit. That doesn't mean they won't work for the individual, but in the collective group of the population, giving it to everybody with colon cancer didn't work.
Okay.
And so believe me, I hope it works in some people. Because again, my notion in the book, it's powerful, is that the body's a complex system. You change that system, the cancer may not want to grow. So in his case, whatever he did may have changed his system.
Okay.
Exercise, losing weight, being lean body mass is the greatest way in the world to change your system.
Got it.
You know, I think we do exercise wrong in our country, and I think the data support that. But we need to change it, and we can have a dramatic effect on health.
Dr. Agus, thank you so much. And I had to, please forgive me. I had to ask those questions because it is so confusing. And there is so much sort of conflicting propaganda
in the
world.
But that's why I wrote the book. And we really try in the book to get people to understand how to interpret these studies. And then every journal is equal. And you got to look at it and say, are those patients like me that study was done on? Or were they not? Were they really done well? Because not all science is the same, unfortunately.
Right.
And we don't really have an arbitrator of quality, and that's a problem.
I can't argue with that. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you. It's our pleasure.
And Dr. Agus, so the book is The End of Illness. Pick it up. It's an incredible read. And where can people learn more? I'm sure you're very busy. I don't know if you're taking patients, but
do you have a
website?
Yeah, we have a website, theendofillness.com or davidagus.com, where you can learn more there, and then the book. And then, again, we're happy to help in any way and push this field forward.
Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you. I appreciate
it.
Hey, it is caller 911 time, and Dana from Buffalo, New York is waiting.
Woohoo! Dana, what's going on?
Hi, Jillian. I'm so excited to be talking to you. We've loved watching you on television, and I'm so pumped to be able to talk to you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for calling. We're excited to talk to you as well.
So my question is, I am a fit mom of two, and I'm due with my third in July.
Congrats.
Thanks. I'm wondering about the six-week rule postpartum before resuming exercise.
Okay.
It seems like celebrities don't follow that rule, or at least it's reported that way. Like Beyonce has a trainer living with her or something. Is that true or safe?
That is true. I happen to know her trainer very well. His name is Marco Borges. He is a close personal friend. He is also highly credentialed. Degree in exercise science. The man is very, very impressive and knowledgeable. However, let me be very clear. With every pregnancy, of course, you know that it's unique to each woman and what her body goes through during the pregnancy, what she goes through during the birth. All of these things are going to have an impact on how quickly she should be up and exercising. In particular, whether or not you've had a C-section, whether you've had natural childbirth. And again, this is unique to every woman and every circumstance, but it is going to affect how quickly you should start exercising. And you need to consult your doctor on that, because there are some women that are like, "Woo, I feel great. I feel good. I'm okay. It was, you know, it's my third kid. It was a breeze. No problem. You know, no tearing, no minimal tearing, this and that." And they're up and at them, not aggressively and insanely, but they're moderately exercising 2 weeks later. That can happen. Then there are women who've had a C-section and they're out of commission for 3 months. So remember that there's no one-size-fits-all approach to this. So the idea is to consult your physician with regard to the circumstances that have gone on with your pregnancy and your birth about what is safe. And don't compare yourself to these people like Beyonce or like Heidi Klum, because I know both their trainers. Both happen to be great friends of mine. So Heidi Klum, my friend Andrea Orbeck, she is the fit pregnancy person in the space, right? She's gotten Heidi Klum on the runway immediately after three babies. I want to be really clear with you, though. Marco Borges, who trained Beyonce, he practically lived. Does Marco live with Jay? He does. Marco lives with Jay-Z and Beyonce. He has been with her every single step of this pregnancy. Andrea Orbeck has been with Heidi Klum every single step of the pregnancy. So they have this expert working in tandem with their doctor, because the fit pregnancy is going to have a dramatic impact on, again, on how quickly they're exercising. When you have that kind of in-home help 24/7 all the time, yeah, you're probably going to get a little boost when you've had the baby. It's probably going to be that much easier to get back into things. Don't look at these scenarios, because as aspirational as these women are, and I adore Beyonce and I have a lot of respect for Heidi Klum, we shouldn't be comparing ourselves to them. I want you right now to think about having the healthiest pregnancy you can have. I want you to keep in mind that you should be, if you can, exercise safely and eat healthily during the pregnancy, which is going to allow you to have the easiest time with your body post-pregnancy, right? So the safest way to handle baby weight is not to gain it. You know, you want to gain, they say 25 to 40 pounds. That's where you want to be. That's the best bet. If it works out otherwise, no shame in that. But then allow yourself some extra time after the baby to get back in shape. No judgment. Don't compare. Be as healthy as and fit as possible during the pregnancy as you can. Consult your physician. And when it is safe for you to get back into fitness after your birth, I want you to do that with no judgment and no comparison.
Now, where would you suggest looking for information on pregnancy and fitness? Because I run like 10 to 12 miles a week still, and I'm usually hitting the weights about 4 days. And I open up these fit pregnancy magazines, and it says go for a brisk walk.
Yeah, I know. And I could give you the general guidelines too of like, okay, you know, nothing compressive on the spine, and prenatal yoga, and blah 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 blah. Honestly, I'm going to tell you this. If you were fit before you were pregnant, then it kind of changes the rules. And they basically say, don't do anything while you're pregnant that you weren't doing before you were pregnant. So, you know, if you weren't running before you were pregnant, don't run while you're pregnant. But one of my good friends was a runner. She's pregnant. She's been jogging every single day. Again, here's what I want you to check out. I'm going to give you my good friend's website. It's AndreaOrbeck.com. She has DVDs. I've put them in my store. Again, this woman is one of my best friends. So when I recommend her, there's no financial interest here. I just adore her and think she's brilliant in the space. With that said, I want you to then consult your physician about, listen, you know, I've read these things. I was a runner beforehand. I'm running. I feel okay. You know, you can go above 140 beats a minute on your heart rate. If you were above 140 beats a minute before, those tend to be the rules, but nothing compressive. You know, don't, this is not the time to throw around heavy weights. That's the one rule I would tell you. Body weight training, and don't get crazy. Don't, this is not the time for you to try to lose weight. Keep it healthy. Incline walking also is something great for pregnant women because it is lower impact, but you still get a fantastic burn. But I would definitely check out Andy's website. And then just please consult your physician before you do anything. And you'll read stuff about women that are like, I ran a marathon the day before I gave birth. I squatted 150 pounds and then I delivered the baby. Maybe, you know, there's those stories. But let's, once again, let's not compare ourselves. Let's ride that middle line where we don't need to be precious, but we don't need to be like, I will prove a point. We don't need to prove a point with your pregnancy either.
Okay.
Check out that website, AndreaOrbeck.com. She's got great advice and great fitness videos as well for pregnant mommies.
Okay, great. Thanks.
All right, buddy. Have a great day.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
You know, okay. That was the funniest image. Sorry. I've just squawked out my child, yeah. And now it's time for a marathon.
It's great. No, this crazy woman ran a marathon the day before she delivered the baby. And then other women go, oh, my God, should I be running a marathon? It's like, you know, I find it, it's like, wow, okay, I guess we can all survive this. That's neat. Look at what this person can do. Okay, let's not all try that at home. So we need to give women permission to have their own pregnancy. It's unique to them, to find their path with it, to take the pressure off, not compare themselves. But it is
celebrity.
Kind of amazing.
You're right. That's so
yeah,
true.
You can't compare. That is not normal.
She hits the ground, she's gonna want to. Rob from Honolulu wants to talk to you.
Rob, what's going on?
Hi, how you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Not bad. I can't complain. It's sunny and about 80.
Oh, gee. Rub it in, Rob. Real nice.
I try.
Yeah, we live in California, and I can't even brag because it's crappy and cloudy out today. So, yeah, good for you, buddy. Really jab it in there. Anyway, would you like to continue boasting about your beautiful weather, or do you have a question?
No, I do have a question for you. So I recently went through a 12-week program and basically got into what I'd consider the best fit, you know, shape of my life.
Yeah.
And, you know, with the diet and everything, I was super strict, and it put a lot of strain on my relationship just because I avoided going out to dinner or drinking or anything that would make me feel like cheating.
Yeah.
And at the time it was, you know, my girlfriend was understanding because she knew I was trying to accomplish something. But I'm finding it hard now after the program trying to revert back to a more normal lifestyle because I obviously want to maintain. I didn't want to do 12 weeks, get into great shape, and then just let it all go down the drain, right?
Of course.
So just trying to maybe get some input on kind of a good way to get that balance back and where I don't revert back to my old self, but, you know, I've got some other people to think about as well, and I just don't want to keep being, you know, the Debbie Downer every time everyone wants to go out.
Oh, sweetie. Okay, well, one of the things that we can sort of liken this to is sometimes we'll call this addiction transfer, where it's like, you know, you go from one extreme to the other. So it's, you know, you're indulging, you're the party guy, you know, you're the guy that has 5 beers with the buddies and then, or maybe more, and then, you know, goes to the fast food place after, and then you're the guy that's like never goes out, never drinks a thing. And the dangerous thing is that, you know, when you have these shifts, right, when it becomes an all or nothing kind of scenario where it's all party time and it's all strict time, neither one of those things are going to be sustainable for you. So you're right in wanting to find that place of balance. And it's a really hard thing for a lot of us because, you know, we talk a lot on the show about how living in that black or white place is easy. It's like, well, when it's all bad and nothing can be lost. And when it's all good, you know, you don't have to deal with disappointments like, oh, no, I had a candy bar. You don't have to deal with fear or insecurities. So the reality of the situation is, I'm just going to explain it to you clinically right now, in that
you know, you've lost weight, right? You were super, super strict, and I'm presuming that you lost probably a lot of weight. Yes?
I didn't lose a lot of weight, but I actually, as contrary, I gained weight, but muscle weight.
Oh.
Kind of, yeah, I mean.
Got it.
More of like a, this was more of a bodybuilding kind of program where I went basically from 175 pounds at 12% body fat
okay.
to about 178 pounds and like 6% body fat. So.
Got it. Okay, this is a slightly different animal. All right. Okay, so with that said, here's what I'm going to tell you to maintain.
Yeah.
Maintain your fitness. So, you know, what you can do is still continue to work out intensely and, you know, explore different kinds of fitness, whatever it might be, whether it's CrossFit or another, you know, another 90-day program. And, you know, men in particular love the P90Xs and the Insanities and all of that. Like, jump into that, have fun with it, explore it, be adventurous with it. But, sweetie, it's okay to go out and eat. It's okay to have a few beers. So what I'm guessing then is that before you did this 12-week program, were you working out that intensely?
Yeah, it was kind of the I worked out intensely but ate whatever I want and then went from, you know, that to working out intensely and really getting onto a dietary program that just shedded the fat, right? So
okay, yeah. So you ate whatever you want.
Yeah,
wanted.
Pretty much.
Got it. All right. You ate whatever you wanted, and it was – give me an example of what a dinner would look like because I'm going to show you what this looks like practically.
Yeah, I mean, a typical – before the program, a dinner would be either one, whatever's in the refrigerator left over from the night before, which could be like cold pizza. You know, it could be – really, it was whatever was the quick, fastest thing, which would be fast food or would be, you know, it'd be anything like that. So.
And how much of it?
Until I was full, which is quite a lot.
Quite a lot. Okay, so, like, could you eat a whole pizza?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so here's what this looks like, sweetie. It looks like this. You go to dinner with your girlfriend. You get a gigantic green salad. You eat that first so it fills you up. And then you either get a little personal pizza with thin crust, light on the cheese, mostly a veggie lover's, or you get a small size pizza and you split it with your girlfriend, still with thin crust, light on the cheese. And you don't have five beers with it, and you don't go to a drive-thru for lunch, and you don't have the Grand Slam breakfast at Denny's in the morning. So you're allowed to have a couple pieces of pizza. You're allowed to have a beer or two, but it's not about an entire pizza and five beers. It's about filling up on healthier things at various points throughout the day. And then, you know what? Yeah, you want to go for a pizza? Go for a pizza. But don't eat the entire thing. You find that balance by, let's say, taking 75% of your day and making it clean and 25% of your day or calories and making it, you know, stuff that is less good for you. And that's a guideline that you can live by. I still have tequila shots. I still have a glass of wine. I still eat chocolate, but I allow myself to drink once a week. And then I'm like, okay, it's good time, girl. You know, here we go. It's my Friday night. All my buddies are like, Jill's drinking tonight. Yay, woo! You know, and that's my night to be fun. And, you know, every single night I'll allow myself 200 calories of whatever. I'm not working out as intensely as you, I guarantee it, and I'm smaller. So I get 200 calories of a treat food. Or I'll work the treats that I want into my calorie allowance, and that's how you find balance. So it's not just go hog wild with the diet. It's work it in a percentage in that way, 25%, 30% at the most, and you find that balance with it.
Yeah, my balance now is I'll be super strict for 7 days, and then the eighth day I just, like, eat anything in sight, so I know it's...
I don't love that for me, but a lot of people love that cheat day. So I don't love it because it makes me, like, live for that one day of the week, and then I go nuts, and then I feel like crap personally.
Yeah.
That's why I like to incorporate a little bit every single day, because then it still gets me in that, okay, nothing, 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 insanity. I still find it to be pendulum swings, but if it works for you and it works for a lot of people, then I would say go ahead. If you find that you feel like crap after, or you feel bad about yourself, or it's triggering you to eat like crap or throw in the towel, try putting a little bit of it in
every single day.
Thank you for your input.
Thank you so much for calling, Rob.
Thank you. It was awesome.
Have a great night.
All right, mahalo.
And a show.
You know how long it's been since I gave you one of those?
Don't do
that. That's
no.
What I think.
We promised people you wouldn't do those. You know, you do so well. And then it just comes out of you.
Well, I just don't like saying goodbye.
I know, but we promised people we wouldn't do those sounds anymore.
No, we didn't. You promised them.
Oh, that's right.
And if I have to say goodbye, then I'm going to amuse myself with a fart sound. Bye.
Bye.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore. Because it's here. And it's funny. And I love you.